Chapter 11. "Walls have ears," said Cuff, examining a rose. "In my business, we prefer the open air. Like this beauty." He sighed. "I've decided to search the servants' thoughts and actions instead of their wardrobes. But before I do, can I ask you whether any of them have acted strangely since the loss of the diamond?" Rosanna immediately came to mind, but before I could answer, I saw Cuff's eyes suddenly look towards the bushes. "What's the matter?" I asked.
"Oh, just a pain in my back," he replied loudly, as though wanting a third person to hear.
We went onto the terrace.
"Does young Rosanna have a lover?"
he asked.
"If she hasn't, she's behaving suspiciously. She was hiding in the bushes just now."
The bushy path by the rose garden was Mr. Franklin's favourite walk. He would take it on his way back from the station. Many times Penelope had seen Rosanna hanging about there since his arrival. I explained this to the sergeant and told him that the poor girl was in love with Mr. Franklin.
"I'm glad. It explains things," he said. "And no doubt he hasn't even noticed the girl."
"Yes, sergeant," I said. "I'm afraid ugly women have a bad time in this world." He looked me very hard in the face, then took my hand and shook it.
"Mr. Betteridge," he said, "I like you."
Back in my office, he asked me to call the servants one by one. The cook was the first, then my lady's maid, then Penelope. Rosanna was next. She stayed longer than any of them and came out as pale as death. Samuel followed. Nancy was last. When she had left, I went into Cuff's court room and found him whistling The Last Rose of Summer.
"If Rosanna asks to go out," he said, "let the poor thing go. But tell me first."
The cook entered. Rosanna had asked to go out for some air because she had a headache. I said yes. As soon as the cook had gone, I showed Cuff the servant's entrance, and he disappeared. I had a chat with the cook and my lady's maid. Neither of them believed Rosanna had been ill the previous day. They had knocked on her door several times during the afternoon. No answer, and it was locked. They had seen a light under the door at midnight, heard the sounds of a fire at 4 in the morning, in June. And, of course, they had told Cuff all this. Later, out in the afternoon, I met Mr. Franklin on the bushy path. When he had returned, my lady had told him about Miss Rachel's refusal of the search. I told him everything else that had happened. "Rosanna Spearman went to Fritzinghall secretly," he said. "She burnt her paint-stained dress. She must have stolen the diamond. I must tell my aunt immediately."
"Not just yet, please, sir,"
said Cuff's sad voice behind us. We turned to him. "Why not just yet?" said Mr. Franklin, annoyed.
"Because, sir, if you tell her ladyship, she will tell Miss Verinder."
Mr. Franklin walked up to the sergeant and stared threateningly down at him. "Are you forbidding me?" he inquired.
"I'm saying, sir, that if you tell Lady Verinder or anyone else before I give you permission, I will abandon the case."
Realizing he had no choice, Mr. Franklin turned away angrily and left us.
"Mr. Betteridge," Cuff said, "please leave the detective work to me, will you?"
He took my arm. "What do you want of me now?" I said.
"Information, as usual," he replied, with a weak smile. He pointed towards the shivering sand. "Show me the beach."
As we approached the bay in the grey of evening, Cuff said,
"I understand your charitable feelings for that poor girl, but she's not in the slightest danger of getting into trouble. Not if I can prove she was simply concerned with the disappearance of the diamond. I have evidence, as plain as the nose on your face, that she's simply an instrument in the hands of another person."
"Can't you give that person a name?" I said.
"Can't you, Mr. Betteridge?"
I shook my head. He gave me one of his sad looks.
"She went secretly to Fritzing Hall yesterday to buy cloth, to make a dress exactly the same as the stained one. The fire in her room was to heat the iron to press the new dress, not to burn the stained one. She knows that the cook and Lady Verinder's maid suspect her, so she still has to hide the dress, doesn't she?"
I nodded.
"I followed her this evening to the fishing village, to a cottage. She came out with something hidden under her coat. I followed her north along the coast as far as I could. Unfortunately, there's nowhere to hide along there. I hope we'll meet her by coming round this way. If not, the sand may tell us what she's been doing."
I felt suddenly uneasy. I could hear Rosanna telling me that the quicksand seemed to be pulling her to it against her will. The light was rapidly fading, and, as there often is when the tide is about to turn, an awful, breathless calm hung over the bay. Cold fear ran up my spine as we saw the mirror-like surface of the sand begin to tremble.
"A most murderous place,"
said the sergeant, echoing my thoughts.
"And no sign of her anywhere."
We went down onto the beach. The only way to get here from the fishing village is by coming round below the cliffs at low tide, I said. We had walked south 100 yards when Cuff suddenly kneeled.
"A woman's,"
he said, examining footprints in the sand. They went round in circles, then finally into the water.
"She was obviously trying to hide where her walk ended, to hide whatever she had under her coat. Perhaps, if we go to the cottage, we may find out what it was."
We reached the fishing village before dark. The cottage belonged to a family called Yolland. The daughter, Lucy, who had a deformed foot, had made friends with Rosanna. Mrs. Yolland invited us in. The fisherman and his son were out. Lucy, always tired and weak, was upstairs. Cuff showed wonderful patience, casually bringing the talk round to Rosanna. He assured her that his only aim was to clear Rosanna of unfair accusations by the other servants concerning the moonstone.
"They hated the poor girl,"
Mrs. Yolland interrupted.
"She said she was going to leave very soon." "I see,"
said Cuff sadly.
"So she has no other friends, apart from you."
"Oh, yes," replied Mrs. Yolland. "This evening she went upstairs on her own. I want to write to a friend," she said. "And later she bought some things she needed for travelling. She showed us a metal case. We had two of these. I sold her one. Sailors use them for keeping things dry. And I sold her two chains." Softly, Cuff began whistling "The Last Rose of Summer."